Welcome back to Zephyr News, a weekly production of FM 90.1 KZFR Chico. Zephyr News is broadcast each Thursday evening from 7 to 7:30 p.m. This week's show features contributions from the Chico State Orion and Chico Soul. Segments from KZFR community members include an update on the Colby Mountain Lookout by Hope Brianna Campbell, news releases by David Foose, and coverage of the Butte County Board of Supervisors meeting by Hope Brianna Campbell.
This is David Foose reporting for Zephyr News. California Governor Gavin Newsom declared this week as AmeriCorps Week. Chico Unified School District is doing a public review period this week for the newly proposed junior high school math curriculum. The review is being held at the district office on East 7th Street. California State Superintendent of Public Instruction Tony Thurman announced that over 400 middle schools and high schools have been selected for the 2026 California Distinguished Schools Program. Chico High School and Inspire School of Arts and Sciences were among those selected for the prestigious award. The California Public Utilities Commission, or CPUC, announced that certain Californians whose homes were destroyed by wildfire and other natural disasters since January 1, 2017, can apply for assistance under the Rebuilding Incentives for Sustainable Electric, or RISE, Homes Program. Homeowners who choose to rebuild a fully electric home within an investor-owned utility service area may apply for support. The Paradise Town Council met on Tuesday, March 10th. Two public speakers opposed the location of the proposed sewer plant and the settling pond.
I'm also opposed to what you guys are wanting to do, a settling pond for your sewer project. I think there's better systems, and I just ask that you consider something else. I realize you've moved pretty far along on this project, but I think for the greater, for the community, I think it's a mistake. Paradise is very much a bedroom community to Chico at this time. In its history, it wasn't, you know, we had industry, we had Feather River Hospital, and so forth. Where our community depends on residents moving back to Paradise. And if you put a settling pond almost anywhere in Paradise, I think it's going to affect the appeal for people to move back here.
Council passed a motion to rename the council chambers after the late U.S. Congressman Doug LaMalfa. The vote was unanimous with Vice Mayor Culleton abstaining. Council reviewed the revised strategic health care recovery plan draft as provided by the consulting firm Abaris Group. Council members expressed disappointment after spending $150,000 on that plan that it did not include getting a new hospital in Paradise, which was the hoped for outcome. Paradise Mayor Steve Crowder said there hasn't been any health care provider willing to build a hospital in Paradise. He hopes instead that 24-hour urgent care facility could be built within the next 5 to 15 years.
I have, you know, and I part of it's my own fault with the disappointment because I knew we wouldn't, but I guess I was hoping, you know, somewhere the magic wand would come in and say, yeah, you guys need a hospital. But that I realize isn't going to happen. I'm still believing that we could support a prompt care, urgent care, 24/7, whatever, where they could pick up what Adventist Health has said they would do and not done, and what have you. As far as partnering with Adventist Health, you know, that would be great, but I don't really think that that's something that Adventist Health is looking to do.
The town of Paradise will begin hazardous fuels reduction and roadside vegetation management work this week along public roadways. Crews will be working along road edges, drainage corridors, and other publicly maintained areas where vegetation accumulation poses a fire risk. No work will be performed on private property herbicide treatments may be used. And finally, the town of Paradise also announced that the town's code enforcement division and police department will be actively enforcing the town's noise ordinance related to construction activity. The ordinance makes it illegal to operate tools or equipment used in construction and related activities if the noise is clearly audible beyond a residential or a commercial property between 7 p.m. and 6 a.m. on weekdays and any time on Sundays or holidays. This is David Foose for Zephyr News.
You are listening to the Orion News Weekly Report, brought to you by California State University Chico, KZFR, KCSE, and KWQA Maker Radio. The reporters and editors of the Orion work tirelessly to bring you relevant, timely, and engaging news, sports, opinion, and entertainment. Last Saturday, a male cyclist crashed into a parked car in the Wellcat Health Center parking lot. Officers and medical personnel performed life-saving efforts, but he was pronounced dead on the scene, according to a press release by the University Police Department. Foul play is not suspected, and identification of the man will be withheld until his next of kin can be notified. Previous deaths on campus include those of 20-year-old Zach Baggins and 55-year-old Linda Blackston, both in 2018. The Chico City Council voted last week to approve a military equipment request submitted by the police department. Assembly Bill 481 requires the department to submit a report once a year outlining its use of military equipment from the prior year, as well as any new military equipment it requests. Items classified as military equipment include drones, command vehicles, and less than lethal firearms, such as rubber bullets. It also includes high power rifles, long range acoustic devices, flashbang grenades, and tools for breaching structures. The approval of the equipment request doesn't necessarily mean it will all be purchased. The department's budget is set by the City Council in June, and as in the past, approved items might not fit within the final budget. Multiple council members noted that the police department receives nearly half of the council's yearly budget.
The Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression, also known as FIRE, accuses Chico State of violating free speech. In the beginning of the spring semester, Fraternity and Sorority Life paused recruitment for 1 year for IFC fraternities. This decision came after a series of hazing allegations in fall of 2025. But not every IFC fraternity was accused or found to be engaged in hazing activities. This, in part, is why FIRE is alleging that the university is violating the First Amendment for, quote, guilt by association. In a letter FIRE sent to President Steve Perez, it stated, quote, Chico State's guilty by association punishment violates students' First Amendment right to free association while failing to meaningfully further campus safety. FIRE called on the university to reinstate recruitment for spring 2026. The university's chief of staff, Ashley Gebb, said that it won't change their stance on the issue.
Last weekend, Chico State women's basketball played in the CCAA postseason. In the first game against Cal State Dominguez Hills, the Cats came away with a 75-70 overtime win. Madison Perry had a career-high 26 points with 14 rebounds, accompanied by Sydney Peterson's career-high of 15. That gave the Wildcats a ticket to the semifinals. In the semifinals, the Cats fell to number one seed Cal Poly Pomona 79-57 and ended their season. Head coach Brian Fogle became the winningest coach in Chico State's women's basketball history at 293 wins. Madison Perry also moved her way to the top five all-time in Wildcat history for points with 510. Chico State baseball split its first conference series against the Cal State Dominguez Hills Toros. The Cats took game one 17-3, but lost the next two games 3-6 and 3-14 before rounding out the weekend with a 10-0 victory. In game one, the Wildcats offense was sharp, putting up five runs in the first inning. The Cats rallied off the pitching of freshman Jack Tews to hold the Toros to just three runs. The Wildcats tacked on 10 runs in the seventh and put the game out of reach. In games two and three, the Wildcats struggled to keep Friday's momentum, only putting up three runs in each game. During game four on Sunday, the Cats bounced back with a 10-0 win. The team had a balanced offense with five shutout innings from Jacob Poole that led to the Toros only connecting for two hits on the day. The Wildcats start their second week of conference play at an even 500 and will play this weekend against Cal Poly Pomona. These stories and much, much more can be found at theorion.com. Today's narrators are Cody Rowan, Hannah Cabral, and Josh Shannon. This week's authors include Jameson Lee Young, Raquel Frulich, Sean Shanks, and Chris Hutton. It's been your boy Josh Shannon, signing off.
This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News. In the mountains northeast of Chico, a historic fire lookout that has washed over Northern California's forest for generations may soon return to service. The Colby Mountain Lookout Tower, located in Lassen National Forest near Butte Meadows, is expected to reopen this spring after months of debate about its future. For decades, this tower has served as a critical early warning system for wildfire detection. The current steel lookout structure was built in 1934 by the Civilian Conservation Corps during the Great Depression, replacing an earlier wooden tower that stood on the site beginning in 1912. For more than four decades, the lookout was staffed each fire season by longtime fire lookout Ken Jordan, who became a familiar figure in the region. From his perch above the forest, Jordan reported hundreds of smoke sightings and helped monitor major fires across Northern California. His observations helped firefighters respond quickly to new ignitions before they could grow into major incidents. The United States Forest Service announced that the lookout would close due to maintenance concerns and the cost of repairs for the aging structure. The closure raised alarms among residents and wildfire safety advocates across Butte County, who argued that the tower still plays an important role in protecting nearby communities. The Butte County Board of Supervisors sent a letter urging the Forest Service to keep the lookout operational, emphasizing the importance of human observation alongside modern technology. Wildfire detection systems across California increasingly rely on remote cameras and artificial intelligence networks. In fact, automated cameras have already been installed on Colby Mountain as part of California's statewide fire detection system. For communities like Butte Meadows, Forest Ranch, and other nearby foothill towns that have experienced devastating wildfire seasons in recent years, early detection is critical. In Chico's News and Review, Rick Hobson announced the tower would reopen. He states, "I made the decision to open Colby Mountain Lookout for this 2026 season. After receiving requests from the public to consider continued staffing at that location," he said in an email to News and Review. Also in Chico's News and Review, Jacqueline USFS, Regional Forester for the Pacific Northwest, states that, "Yes, I can absolutely confirm that we've made the decision to staff the Colby Mountain Lookout for the upcoming 2026 fire season. Although modern wildfire detection now includes cameras and satellite technology, many fire officials say human lookouts still play an important role in spotting smoke and tracking fires across rugged terrain. That's why the reopening of the Colby Mountain Lookout has drawn attention from residents, local leaders, and wildfire safety advocates across the region." This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News.
This is Sunny for Chico Soul. This week, I'm bringing you Chico Soul's coverage of immigration and the work of a local researcher documenting human trafficking. I also sat down with managing editor Leslie Layton to talk about the relaunch of ChicoSoul.org. In statewide immigration news, Chico Soul posted a story from La Opinion about the death of Alberto Gutierrez Reyes, who was in custody with Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Gutierrez Reyes's widow decried medical negligence. The facility where her husband was held was one of a growing number of privately run detention centers across the country. Gutierrez Reyes was the seventh person to die in ICE custody this year, and the second in California. La Opinion provided the names and circumstances of each death. In local immigration news, Yucheng Tang posted a story about Chico residents Ashley Liu and Tom Zhang and their boba shop, Project T, on Sacramento Avenue. Tang writes that their story is a reminder that immigrants can strengthen the local economy, enrich the culture, and build a more vibrant community, even as they seek a better life far from home. Chico Soul also followed the work of a local researcher over the past 2 weeks. Lexi Lin and Leslie Layton profiled Kate Tranchell, a retired professor of history at Chico State University, for Chico Soul's Changemaker series. Then, Lin gave us a story about a talk that Tranchell delivered on March 5th, in which she discussed her newest book titled The New Slavery: Accounts of Human Trafficking in Eastern Europe. Tranchell writes about modern human trafficking, which she argues, somewhat controversially, functions like slavery. Tranchell described the book's style as documentary prose, noting that she included transcriptions of interviews instead of inserting her own interpretations in order to tell victims' stories as authentically as possible. Over at ChicoSoul.org, we relaunched our website a couple weeks ago. Managing editor Leslie Layton said the redesign was meant to make it easier for readers to find news and information. ChicoSoul.org now includes multiple bilingual community resource guides, a calendar for civic meetings and events, and more stories in Spanish. Here's Leslie talking about the bilingual resource guides.
We really see it as a part of our effort to reach out to the Spanish-speaking community and have practical information for both Spanish and English speakers that people need and can use. So we have several different pages so far. People who may need help finding a hot meal have a list of resources. There is a list of resources for staying safe as an immigrant and as a protester. And we have a list of resources for university students, like how to become a dreamer, financial and legal help for students at both Butte College and Chico State.
Following the website relaunch, I asked Leslie what remains true for Chico Soul from its early days.
We founded Chico Soul in 2007, and to be honest, I'm surprised to hear myself say this, but probably the truest thing is our commitment to keeping Chico Soul nonprofit. We founded Chico Soul, my husband and I, as a nonprofit in order to reinforce what we call in journalism the firewall between reporting and revenue. We did not want to be subject to any of the interests of advertising, and we wanted this to be a place where news would be treated as a community service. But to be honest, back in 2007, I was not sure this could work. We did have public media, and we had broadcast stations that received some government funding, and we have KZFR, which was community funded. But no one in this area was doing exactly what we were trying to do, which was produce news, you know, with trained journalists in a text format without any advertising. And what we know now is that it can work. There are communities across the country that have nonprofit news sites. And this has been really interesting for me to watch. This is absolutely doable.
I then asked Leslie what readers can expect from Chico Soul going forward.
You know, we're working really hard to create our first full-time salary position, and we need the community to help us as we move toward that goal. But what they can expect is more investigative reporting, in-depth features, stories in Spanish, more of the things that I think we do well that other outlets have not been able to do. We're not a paper of record. So we still need the other news outlets that will cover things on a day-to-day basis. But those outlets often don't have the resources to pursue stories in the way that we do. And that's what we want to continue to do.
Leslie said in closing,
thank you, KZFR, for this news show. It's one more service to the community, and I hope people will tell their friends about it.
This has been Sunny for Chico Soul. Follow the latest at chicosoul.org.
This is Hope Rurana for Zephyr News. The Butte County Board of Supervisors approved a contract aimed at reducing wildfire risk along local roadways across the county. Agenda item 4.5 focused on a contract with P31 Enterprises to carry out a hazard mitigation grant roadside fuels reduction project. The project is funded through the Federal Hazard Mitigation Grant Program, which helps communities reduce long-term risk from natural disasters such as wildfires. The goal of the project is straightforward: remove excess vegetation and combustible materials along key road corridors in wildfire-prone areas of Butte County. Officials say overgrown roadside vegetation can pose a major wildfire hazard. During fire season, dry grass, brush, and small trees along roadways can easily ignite from vehicle sparks, equipment, or wind-blown embers. Once ignited, roadside fires can quickly spread into nearby forest or residential areas. By thinning vegetation and clearing brush, the fuels reduction project is designed to create safer buffer zones along roads that firefighters often rely on during emergencies. In major fires, roads must remain clear and accessible so residents can evacuate safely while emergency vehicles move in to fight the fire. Heavy vegetation close to roadways can slow evacuations, reduce visibility, and increase the risk that flames will jump across escape routes. Under the contract approved today, P31 Enterprises will perform the vegetation management work, which may include mechanical brush removal, trimming of small trees, and clearing dense roadside growth in targeted areas. Lauren Wimmer, resident of Megalia, speaks out at the Board of Supervisors meeting. She states,
all right, thank you. My name's Lauren Wimmer. I've been a resident of Megalia for about 23 years. My husband and I own a veterinary practice on the Skyway that will be affected by this project. I found the scope of work to be very kind of vague to know what sorts of impacts we're going to have. We do not support widespread spraying of carcinogenic herbicides along our roadsides for the health of our community and our clients. We also, it says that there may be prescribed burning or burning of the vegetation. We would not like that to occur on our property or directly around the veterinary practice due to health impacts. I had other questions. It sounded like the, and concerns, it sounded like the work was going to be, have to be done by May, which seems like a very short timeline for the amount of vegetation removal that needs to be carried out. I also have friends that have property along the Skyway, and as property owners, we're not sure exactly, you know, what's going to happen with our landscaping. and spraying, just based on what we've been able to read. So it seems very vague. One other thing that has been a concern over time is the road along Skyway going into Magalia. There's very steep slopes, and we don't know what that the impact of vegetation removal is going to be on erosion onto the roadway. It's been a problem right entering Magalia, where we've had soil and rocks flowing across the road during heavy rain events. And the vegetation now is native vegetation that has grown back and is finally keeping some of the soil from flowing onto the roadway during heavy rain. And, wondering if this vegetation removal is going to create more problems in that area. Thank you.
Some community members and guest speakers express oppositions to the contract with P31 Enterprises for the Hazard Mitigation Grant Roadside Fuels Reduction Project. They argued that removing roadside vegetation could harm local ecosystems, disrupt wildfire habitat, and clearing too much vegetation might not be the best approach for wildfire prevention. Several speakers suggest alternative strategies, emphasizing that vegetation management should balance wildfire safety with environmental preservation. Supervisor Todd Kimmelshu said he supports the Roadside Fuels Reduction Project, noting that protecting local residents and keeping them safe is his top priority.
I've just got one comment, and I agree with Supervisor Connolly. Our number one priority, as far as I'm concerned, as county supervisors, is to keep our citizens safe. And this is, to me, is a safety issue. And if this is what the professionals believe is the best for safety, then I would approve this as it is delivered to us.
The board approved a contract with P31 Enterprises for the Hazard Mitigation Grant Roadside Fuels Reduction Project. While some community members oppose removing roadside vegetation, citing concerns about impacts on wildfire and local ecosystems. The Butte County Board of Supervisors agreed to move forward with the Hazard Mitigation Grant Roadside Fuels Reduction Project. Supervisor Doug Teeter emphasized that the project allows flexibility, giving staff the option to use targeted spraying to manage vegetation, while officials say the work will help keep residents safe and protect critical evacuation routes during wildfire season. Also, Doug Teeter states,
we move this item with the condition of no prescribed fire in the urban area, and then adding the opt-out for the spray, just like we do now in any other area. Let's see if we get the votes.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No abstentions.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would say in the future, let's make sure we get to the community.
The Butte County Board of Supervisors ultimately agreed to move forward with the Hazard Mitigation Grant Roadside Fuels Reduction Project. Officials say the work will help protect residents, reduce wildfire risk along key roadways, and keep evacuation routes clear during fire season. This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News.
Zephyr News is produced by Trevor Parks, Lorenz Weissel, and KZFR volunteers. Listeners may send tips for stories to news@kzfr.org or by using the Submit a Story icon on kzfr.org. This program is made possible by the financial support of listeners like you. You can support KZFR's journalistic endeavors by visiting kzfr.org/donate. Subscribe to Zephyr News on your favorite podcast platform and share your thoughts on social media. Thank you for tuning in. We'll be back next week.